Now, I want to start this morning by asking all of us in here a question, and that is, how good is your eyesight? I was at the opticians not that long ago, and so I know that my eyesight is basically as good as it was 2 years ago, and also about as good as it was 4 years ago. There's not really been any change. I did still need to buy a new pair of glasses, though, because apparently 4 years is too long to have the same pair, at least according to one of the members of my marriage. But how good is your eyesight? And I want us to be thinking about sight this morning, because that's what the passage that we're going to look at is all about. Because how we see Jesus makes all the difference in the world. And I want you to imagine if, when I had been at the opticians recently, he had come back to me and said something along the lines of, "Well, Mr. Johnson, we've done all the tests, the results are in, and it does appear that you are sighted. Therefore, I'm going to have to sort that out for you. I'm going to have to take those two eyeballs you've got and remove them." Now, that sounds absolutely absurd, doesn't it? And yet, if we look closely at what Jesus says in the chapter we're going to read, it's not that far away. He says that he came to give sight to the blind and blindness to the sighted. Jesus does often surprise us. He confounds our expectations. I know that often we feel so overfamiliar with the Bible that we think we know what it's going to say before we've even looked at it. But I want us to be careful that we don't let that happen, at least not this morning, because John chapter 9 is all about seeing. And so we need to make sure that we see what is there for us. Whether this is the first time or the 100th time that you've looked at this chapter, let's pay close attention so we can find out what on earth Jesus means when he talks about sight to the blind and blindness to the sighted. Well, let's briefly put the chapter in context for us. You might be familiar to some extent with John's Gospel. The first half is structured around seven signs. That's what John calls them. And this healing of the man born blind is sign number 6 of 7. So Jesus has already turned water into wine. He's healed a dying child. He's healed a paralyzed man. He's fed the 5,000 and he'd walked on water. And all of these really are signs which tell us about who Jesus is and what his kingdom is like. John tells us explicitly in chapter 20, near the end of his gospel, that the purpose of recording these signs is so that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. So understanding these signs of John's is about having life in all its fullness in Jesus' name. Because as I said at the start, the fact is how we see Jesus makes all the difference in the world. That is true whether you're here this morning as someone who's still investigating Jesus or as someone who's been a Christian for over 50 years. How we see Jesus matters a lot. Now, I've got two main points this morning taken from Jesus' own summary of what he's teaching here. Sight to the blind and blindness to the sighted. So we'll take the first one first. Sight to the blind. And I'll start by saying something pretty obvious here. Jesus heals a man who was born blind. And we can't miss the fact that this sign is an astonishing miracle. This had never been done before. Now, there's other occasions in the Old Testament where blind people are healed, but never before had someone who was born blind been healed of that blindness. And here we have Jesus, the light of the world, doing just that. In the Old Testament, the prophet Isaiah was writing around 6 centuries before Jesus came, and he said that the coming of the Messiah's kingdom would be characterized by things like the lame walking, the deaf hearing, the blind having their sight restored. And here is Jesus showing as plainly as possible that he is that Messiah. He is that promised one that they were waiting for. Now, Jesus makes clear this man's blindness is not because of sin. The disciples got that wrong. But it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Jesus is the light of the world, and he has come to bring sight to the blind. For this man in John 9, that was very literal. For most of the rest of us, this literal healing points us to a spiritual reality behind it. Now, just like the healed man, the natural condition for all of humanity is that we are born spiritually blind. That is the plain teaching of the Bible. And it's not a very complimentary thought, is it? It does require a degree of humility for us to accept that apart from the work of Jesus in our lives, we are spiritually blind. And yet, we know that Jesus is making that exact point because he says himself in verse 39, "For judgment I've come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Jesus came to give sight to blind people. Now, from his point of view, there's really only two sorts of people in the world. There are those who are blind and who know that they are, and there are those who see, or rather who think that they can. Now, those two sorts of people are typified in this account by the healed man. He humbly comes to Jesus. And the Pharisees, they proudly reject what Jesus has to say because they're so confident that they already see perfectly clearly. So how good is your eyesight? We're going to concentrate first on the healed man. And if you've got the chapter, it'll be handy to have it open in front of you. Notice the way that as we go through this chapter, this blind man grows in his understanding of Jesus. So if you've got a Bible, have a look down at verse 11. He calls Jesus the man. And then there's a development. Look now at verse 17, and he calls Jesus a prophet. And finally, verse 38, the man says, "Lord, Lord, I believe." And he worships Jesus. So we have a man, a prophet, Lord. And what we see going on in this man's life is really what it looks like to move from blindness to sight. The light of the world has come, and he has given sight to this blind man. And this man, with his new sight, recognizes that Jesus is the Son of Man, the long-promised Messiah. Jesus is the one that this man needs to believe in and to worship, and he does so. We learn that the way of salvation here is to turn from darkness to the light of the world. Now, I want us to notice as well the man's humility as he does this, because it's to people who can't see and who know that they can't see that Jesus gives sight. So you may have noticed in all of the arguments there were about who healed the man and how it happened, again and again he emphasizes how much he doesn't know. So look at verse 25. He says that he doesn't know whether Jesus is a sinner or not. He just knows that he was born blind and now he can see. Or verse 36. He doesn't know who the Son of Man is, and so he needs to come and ask Jesus. Now, of course, the point here is not the man's ignorance. It's not commending ignorance. The point here is that this is a blind man who knows that he's blind. He does, of course, grow in his knowledge of Jesus. But before that, what matters to Jesus is that this blind man knows that he's blind, because it's people like that who Jesus came to give sight to. Now, I wonder what you make of all that. How might you answer now if I was to ask you again, how good is your eyesight? if you're not yet a Christian, how do you feel about Jesus here? He's seeking blind people who know that they're blind. Is that you? Could you be a bit like this healed man here? Or if you are a Christian, how does this passage make you see Jesus? Do you read accounts like this in the Bible and think, well, of course, that's only relevant for evangelism. I have been a Christian for however many years, and so obviously I can see now. Well, is that the sort of follower that Jesus is seeking for here? This healed man is really interesting. The healed man is very imperfect in his theology. Which of us isn't? There are a number of points in which he needs to grow. There's lots of things that he doesn't yet know about Jesus, and he's not fully figured out. But he does know his limits. He knows that he's blind. He needs Jesus. And even after he's had his sight restored, he knows that he still needs Jesus' help to understand. Now, I labour that because each of us needs to be careful. We need to be careful and to guard our hearts against starting out like a healed man and ending up like a Pharisee. I really love reading these passages you get in the Gospel where there's a new believer and they begin their walk with Jesus. They're generally very enthusiastic about the whole thing, even if their faith is a bit simplistic and naive. It's really encouraging to see. This man here is willing to accept the cost of following Jesus. He was most likely thrown out of the synagogue. He receives a tirade of abuse at the hand of the Pharisees. It's almost as if he already knew what Jesus said in Matthew 5:11. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and say all kinds of things against you on account of my name. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. Now, when I read these sorts of accounts of new believers, it reminds me a little bit of when I first became a Christian. The passion, the zeal, the sudden realization that I had been blind and yet now I could see. But I think what we need to be careful of is that we need to remember that that sort of attitude to Jesus is not exclusively for those who are just starting out. It is for all of us, even those of us who are many years or even decades along the path. Unless Jesus opens our eyes, we will remain blind. And if we allow our hearts to become hardened, we might even end up like these Pharisees here, confident that we know everything and we don't need Jesus to correct us or tell us anything more. We need to pay attention because there's a warning here. We're all blind before we meet Jesus. Jesus specifically came to give sight to blind people, people like me and like you. Well, there's the blind man. That's point one, sight to the blind. But what about the others? What about the Pharisees? And that's what this second point is really all about. Blindness to the sighted. Blindness to the sighted. Now, in my notes, I've got that word sighted in inverted commas. And that's actually quite important because the sighted people that Jesus is talking about here could be more accurately described as those who think they can see, but who can't. Jesus is not at all like that arbitrary optician that I mentioned earlier. It's not like he goes around gouging out the eyes of people who can see simply because they can see. That's not what he's talking about when he says that he came to give blindness to the sighted. But what he is telling us is that there are some people who are so stubborn in their refusal to accept the light that Jesus brings, that they will simply be confirmed in their own stubborn blindness. And if you dwell on that, that's terrifying. That is a very uncomfortable thought. These are people who claim to see, but who can't. Because they think they have all the light they need, they will not come to the light of the world. And because they do not come to the light of the world, they will never truly see. Now, I want us to track through the passage again and look at the behaviour of the Pharisees. We did it with the blind man before. Let's look at what they are like. And keep an eye out, if you can, for their arrogance and pride. It shouldn't be too difficult to spot. Now, whereas the blind man again and again admits how little he knows, what we see in the Pharisees is that they repeatedly make confident pronouncements about how much they know. So have a look at verse 16 first. This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. Well, they were quite wrong about that. Verse 24, we know this man is a sinner. Well, no, Jesus was not a sinner. And in verse 34, this one, they're speaking to the blind man, or the healed man rather, and they say, you were steeped in sin at birth. It wasn't particularly kind of them to say that, but actually Jesus has already said earlier that this man's blindness was not because of sin. And so we can see, just from having a quick skim of the chapter, that these Pharisees, so adamant that they can see, are in fact utterly blind. One of the few times that they do get it right is completely unintentional. It's almost comical. Have a look at verse 29. They say, well, we know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. Well, that's true. They had no idea where Jesus came from. If they had known his father, they would have known him, but they didn't. I want us to have a wee pause for thought here, though. It's quite easy when you read the Gospels to see the Pharisees as though they're a group of pantomime villains, as if there was some kind of telltale music that told you when they were coming along and people say, uh-oh, here come the Pharisees. It is really easy to look at the Pharisees and think something along the lines of, well, I am so glad that I am nothing like them. And yet it's exactly that sort of arrogant heart that was the Pharisees' problem, and which we do need to guard against. I would say perhaps especially so in evangelical churches like we are a part of. We all place a huge importance on the Bible as the Word of God, and rightly so. And we all care a lot about understanding the Bible correctly, about true doctrine, and again, rightly so. But we do need to be careful, because the Pharisees did that too, and look where it got them. Now, I'm not saying that loving the Bible and wanting to live by what is true is the problem. Of course it's not. But the sinful tendency in every one of our hearts to take what is good, to use it to put ourselves on a pedestal above contradiction, even from Jesus, that is the problem. These Pharisees were so sure that they knew that exactly what it was going to be like when the Messiah came. They just knew what it would be like. They knew their Bibles that well. And they got it completely wrong. They missed the Messiah. They persecuted an innocent man. They claimed to see, but were blind. There was a shamble of an inquisition. There was 3 separate interrogations. With the blind man, with his parents, then with the blind man again. We'll just quickly run through them so we know some more of the detail of what's going on here in these arguments. So it might be helpful to keep your eyes on the chapter just to follow along. First interrogation, verses 13 to 17. The big issue here is about Sabbath observance. Apparently, Jesus had broken at least 3 of the Sabbath laws here. None of them were specifically in the written law, the Bible, but they were all in the oral law, which the Pharisees held to be authoritative as well. So first one, obvious one, he heals on the Sabbath. Apparently, according to their tradition, you weren't allowed to do that unless it was a case of saving a life. You also weren't allowed to knead on the Sabbath. Jesus kneaded to make the mud with the dust and the saliva. And you weren't allowed to anoint the eyes. So here we have Jesus breaking their law in 3 different ways, and the Pharisees' conclusion is this man cannot possibly be from God. The healed man concludes this man's a prophet. second interrogation, verses 18 to 23. This is they go to his parents, and they want to confirm that he was born blind and to ask them how he was healed. The parents admit, well, yes, he's our son. He was born blind and now he can see, but we don't know how it happened. Ask him yourself. Well, it might just be they weren't admitting to knowing how it happens, but either way, they didn't get any joy there. So they go back to the blind man, interrogation number 3, and this is 24 to 34. The Pharisees' tone here does become particularly abusive. They have made it quite clear to this healed man that they think that he's lying. They are sure that Jesus is a sinner, and so they press him again on how he was healed. And this really, it's not a dialogue at all. This third interrogation is a slagging match. They've already made up their minds. They're asking questions, but they know what they're going to conclude. Jesus is a sinner. So is the healed man. End of story. Nothing else for the Pharisees to learn here. Now, if we stop again and ask a question of the Pharisees at the end of verse 34, how good is their eyesight? How clearly do they see Jesus? And the obvious answer, of course, is that they're utterly blind. Their stubborn refusal to come to Jesus for light just confirms them in their own blindness. Jesus said, "For judgment I've come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Well, Jesus brings division. There are those who see and those who don't. There are those who will come to the light and there are those who will refuse to. The light enlightens some and blinds others. So how are we going to conclude today? Well, if you're not yet a Christian, if you're still investigating, my prayer for you, along with John who wrote this gospel, is that you would come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, and that you might have life in his name. Humbly admit that you need him to give you light. Don't be like a Pharisee. Now, for those of us who are Christians, let's make sure that we learn from this healed man here. He comes to Jesus for light. He faces opposition because of his name. And he humbly admits what he does not know. He also worships Jesus. Now, as Christians, we are called to go out with this good news, to share it with the world, to be lights in dark places. And just like Christ and like the healed man here, when we do that, we'll find that we're gladly received by some and that we're harshly rejected by others. The Apostle Paul wrote as much in one of his letters to the church at Corinth. He said, "For we are to God the pleasing aroma of Christ among those who are being saved and those who are perishing. To the one we are an aroma that brings death, to the other an aroma that brings life." So let's just ask one last time, how good is your eyesight? When you look at Jesus, what do you see? A sinner? A mere man? A prophet? Or the Lord, who deserves all of our worship?